recorded in the year 2017 by the Gawler Community Broadcasting Association as part of the Gawler Oral History Interview Project.
This is a chat between Rodney McKenzie and Ian Alexander MacDonald, who was born in the 6th of March 1948. So welcome, Ian.
Thank you.
First off, I'd like you to talk about what are some of your memories before you went to school. So firstly, where were you born?
I was born in a little place on the outskirts of Liverpool called Speke, S-P-E-K-E. Mm-hmm. First of all, when I was born, contrary to what some people might say, I was born. For the first 2 years of my life, was in Western Avenue, which a lot of people would remember if you're from Liverpool. Mm-hmm. Then they built this area called Speke, which was just housing, commission houses. And we moved to a road called Little Heath Road, right, which was quite a long road that virtually started at one end, was at virtually what they called Speke Airport, which is now Liverpool Airport.
Right.
And that went right up to what was then, before that, but the top end they since built the Ford factory. So it was quite a long road. Mm. I can still remember them bitumising the road. I used to stand there and watch the big steam rollers rolling the tar out. And I must have been 3 or 4. We lived there till 1960. In the mid-50s, 58, 59, I guess you'd call it a cul-de-sac off Little Heath Road, was called Upton Green. It was about 100 metres up from us. Now, in that cul-de-sac there, number 25, there was a lad called George Harrison. And my friend lived next to him, Alan. He was learning to play the violin. And there was a big archway between both houses. When we went to high school, we actually walked through that archway. So just about every day I'd walk past this George Harrison's house. And about 3 or 4 streets away was a fellow called Paul McCartney. But in the mid-50s, Paul moved to Western Avenue, where we'd come from. And I can remember one instance, I must have been 10 or 11. I was out the front of the house and this chap walks past with his guitar on his back and I said, "You can't play that." And he was going to have a go at me. But Mum must have been watching out the front window and she called me in. That guy's name was George Harrison. But then, carrying on with that story, my cousin lived in Hunts Cross, which was the next suburb up near the Ford factory. And I can't remember the name of the road now, but when the Beatles got a bit of money, George bought his parents a house, which was right opposite where my cousin lived, so my cousin got to know him quite well. Mm. And she got their autographs, which I have a copy of. So I know that they're the original autographs, because a lot of the autographs, if you hand the book in, George used to sign them all. Mm. He was known for that. But anyway, I can remember starting school, and it was when they had a pantomime. I can remember starting school and pantomime, and somehow I got into that, I don't know how, standing on stage as a shepherd when I was about 5.
That's what we do.
Yeah. And I did reasonably well in primary school. I've always had a penchant for history, and I always top of the class in history. And I guess that sort of carried on quite a bit to now, where I'm part of the Gawler history team. Yeah, I can't remember a real lot about primary school, except one of the teachers was Miss Jones, I remember that. But I used to sit next to a girl called Janet Stewart. I can still remember that.
Okay.
I was a bit slow at reading, and she used to help me to read. Mm-hmm. And her dad used to be the localised cream man. He used to drive the Walls ice cream van up our street. That was Mr. Stewart.
Okay.
Anyway, we came out to Australia, moved to Elizabeth. The ice cream van came up the street. And guess who it was? Mr. Stewart.
Was it really?
The same man.
The same Mr. Stewart.
I looked at him, he looked at me, huh?
Yeah, okay. So I'd have to ask my wife then whether she remembers.
She'd remember the Walls ice cream man anyway, yeah. And probably if she lived in Elizabeth, quite possibly he was the ice cream man.
Mm.
I can't remember the brand it was, but it certainly wasn't Walls. Walls being English.
No.
And then high school, I used to walk with two friends, Derek from Upton Close, which was another cul-de-sac the other side of us, and we'd walk up and pick up Alan, Nick, who lived next to George, and then we'd walk through that big archway. And if you look on the Google Maps close enough, you can actually see the archway, but it's been bricked in. You can see it's been all bricked in. And so we used to go to high school up there, Stapleton Avenue it was. We had a bit of fun there. But then again, I can't remember too much about it.
So it was either innocent or naughty fun, was it?
Pass.
So you came to Australia...
1960.
1960, okay.
Yeah. October 25th, we left Tilbury Docks. And that was certainly the best holiday I'd had for many years. Even for years afterwards was probably the best holiday I had being on the ship, the SS Orontes. It was its second last trip to Australia, then it was scrapped. It was built in 1929. Used to be a troop ship during the war. I can remember every morning the steward would walk around the decks with a box of ice cream, little, what they call dandies, little cups.
I remember the dandies.
Yeah. And he'd walk around and give everyone one, and then he'd leave the box on the side of the swimming pool for the other people. But I used to follow him and pinch him.
I reckon. So I would believe in that too.
Yeah. I wanted to get the autograph of the captain. But, of course, nobody could ever get the autograph of the captain. So I went to places I wasn't supposed to go, and I saw this guy that looked pretty snazzy with this uniform on. And I said, I wanted the captain's autograph. And he says, well, he says, we don't normally do that. He says, I can't give you an autograph now. He says, but I'll tell you what. If you go to the creche or the nursery, wherever the kids used to go at that time, go there tomorrow and I'll leave something for you. So I went there and I told the lady that, captain's going to leave something for me. She said, what? So I went there next morning and there was a postcard of the ship signed by the captain and the staff commander.
Wow.
And I've still got that today.
Fantastic.
And she was absolutely floored. She said, I don't know how you did that.
So you were roughly 12 when you came?
12 out. I was, yep. And on the boat, I can remember there was the Seven Dwarfs. Now these were obviously Seven Dwarfs that are coming out from England to do a national tour of Australia.
Okay.
And I've got the clipping out of the paper somewhere where it talks about their tour in Australia, and I got their autographs as well. Still got them.
Mm-hmm.
Not that they're any use, I suppose, but I've still got them. So that was a good holiday. We arrived here November 26th. Got in early in the morning. We got onto a bus.
So you arrived here as in Adelaide?
Port Adelaide,
yeah. Here, okay.
We were supposed to go to Melbourne, but with a bit of talking to and fro with the staff, we managed to get off at Adelaide because that's where our family is.
Yes.
Yeah.
So you had family out here before you came out here.
Yep.
Okay. Yep.
And we got on a bus to Finsbury Hostel. And we got to Finsbury Hostel something like about 10:30 in the morning, and Grandmother was waiting for us, and she'd been out here 5 years, but I still remembered her quite well. I knew who she was as soon as I saw her.
So she would have come out about the same time as my wife. My wife came out in 55.
In 55 she came out as well, on the Oronsay.
Yeah, I was going to say, it sounds very similar to the...
It's a sister ship.
It's a sister.
Yeah. I think there was two or three different ones, but the Oronsay was much newer. my auntie must have been posher.
Or luckier. Yeah.
I come from the scum of Liverpool. rough area.
Tell that to the Beatles. They've probably got more money than we'll ever wave a sticker.
Yeah. It's funny. I saw a concert on TV with the Beatles. It was a get-together thing. And Paul was saying, oh, yeah. He says, I can remember, he says, I came from Hardwick Road. And I said, no, you didn't. You came from Hardwick Road. Number 12 he lived in.
Mm.
I remember the road because there used to be two buses that were virtually stationary. They were mobile shops, but they always stayed in the same place. Mm. And there was one in Upton Green, which is where we used to go all the time. It was the local shop, which was the same cul-de-sac as George lived in.
Mm.
And there's actually a photograph in George's book, which I can show you, where, I don't know, his mum, I think it was, took a photograph of George outside the house with his guitar ready up to go off somewhere. And I'm 99% sure the guy in the background is me.
We got up to when you came to Australia, but we failed to mention what family, what other family members there were.
I was the oldest. I had my sister was 18 months younger than me. She's living in Andrew's Farm at the moment. And then my next brother, Larry, I can still remember when he was born. I was about 4 years old, 3 years old. I still remember him being born. But he passed away earlier this year.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had my younger, another brother, Gordon, who's in the Air Force in Queensland. And my youngest brother, Mark, is in Tasmania. I always blame him for me not being able to go out on the ship when the ship docked, because I had to stay on the ship and look after him while the rest of the family went. The only place I got off was Naples, I think.
Okay.
Then I had to stay on board and look after him while the family got off and went everywhere else, India and all that. Mm-hmm. Oh, never mind. I still love him.
Mm. Okay, so there was a sister and
three brothers.
And three
brothers, yeah.
Three brothers, yeah. Okay, so
all the boys used to sleep in one bedroom in England. My sister had a room to herself.
Yes.
I'm jealous.
Very unfair. Very unfair.
Yeah. And, of course, in 1955, my grandmother and grandfather and auntie, my mum's sister, came out to Australia in 55. My auntie used to man the kiosk at the end of Western Avenue. It used to be where the buses come down out of the city, down the end of Western Avenue, and then turn around and go back again. There used to be a kiosk down there where they serve tea for the busmen, and she used to run that.
Okay.
And I've got a photo of her in the caravan there. Yep. I think it was run by a fella called Butler. And I think he had several of those.
You mentioned during the gap some of the places that you stopped on the trip out here, but I was wondering whether what you can remember of those stops, as much as you landed with babysitting duties, but the stops that the ship made.
The first one was after we left Tilbury, you go through what's called the Bay of Biscay, which is one of the roughest bits of water you could ever travel through. And I got terribly seasick. But I soon learned how to overcome that. Because when you're seasick, you tend to go and lie down in your bunk and you stay there.
And that's the worst place for you to be.
So you get up on deck and you've got to watch the horizon, because you get seasick because of your ears. Mm. You're moving, but your eyes say, no, you're not.
Mm.
So I've been on some very rough boats since then, and I could stand on deck without hanging on to anything. Well, the rougher the better. Once seasick, you sort of learn. And so, yeah, get up on deck, have a good look. And then we go from the Bay of Biscay, you go round the coast of France there, between England and France. And the first stop was Gibraltar.
Okay.
But that was at night time. So Mum and Dad got off and went look around, but not me. I had to stay there. But I looked out the porthole and saw Gibraltar at night with the lights. Big deal.
So you were 12 when this is happening. So you'd have memories, but you also hit babysitting duties.
And I had to look after my little brother.
Yeah, so you didn't get off, but you were old enough to be left to do the babysitting. So.
And then from there we went through the Mediterranean. I remember going past Sardinia. We could see the big island to the side of the boat, and then past Sicily up into Naples. I did get off, I think, in Naples for a little while, looking around. I remember looking at in the shoe shops, and it was something like 200,000 things. I thought, oh, a lot of money. Yeah, but that was only lira.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exchange rate was fairly low.
Yeah. And from the boat, I remember standing on the ship, looking out across the land, and you could see Vesuvius in the distance, Mount Vesuvius, and of course that caused a few problems some years ago. And from there we went down the Suez Canal. Yes, it was
so
the
Suez. So you went through the Suez Canal.
Yep.
So that had opened.
It had opened. Yeah, I'm not sure when it opened, but I know in November, October, November 1960, we went down the Suez Canal. It was rather a strange experience because virtually both sides, you could go to both sides of the boat and you're virtually looking down at sand. And you've got the Arabs sitting on the sand, on the top of the sand dunes with their camels. So it was a very narrow place. I don't know how they managed to get the ship down there, but they did. And we went, if I've got the order correct, from there to India. No, sorry, Port Said. Was it Port Said, Port Said? But you didn't get off the boat.
That was the end of the Suez.
Yeah. And you didn't get off the boat. The little boats came to the side of the ship.
Yep.
And the goods used to come up in baskets. And you'd have a look and say, and send the money down if you wanted it. Or as some people did, just say, thank you very much, and walked away. Yeah, there was a few empty baskets went back, and you hear these people yelling and screaming at you. not guilty.
But they weren't able to get on, and you weren't able to get off.
So. That's right. So you just said, oh, that looks nice, thanks very much, and sent the empty basket down and walked off. Probably happened quite a bit. I did see it once or twice. And then from there to India. No, sorry, Colombo, Ceylon. Which is now Sri Lanka. Ceylon is still the capital. And I didn't get off there either. Then from there to Fremantle, I didn't get off there either. Not good. I had a chat. We were on the side there, the pier, and this guy, Perth boy or something, comes up and starts talking to me. I'm over the side of the ship. And I was saying that I wanted to get the captain's autograph. So I got their autograph since then. And he says, well, there he is. He said, I'll get it for you. Give me your book. And he chased after somebody, disappeared, come back with some signatures on there. And I looked and thought, you little shit. They weren't even the right name. So he said he'd got them for me and he just signed whatever. So anyway, but then I got the originals after that. Went from there to Adelaide, and then we're here.
Life on board?
Excellent, yeah. It was a one-class ship, and it was an old ship, but it was the best holiday I'd had for years. Well, the best holiday I'd had to that time and for years after. We've been on a few cruises since, and to me, it's the best holiday you can get. It's certainly the cheapest holiday you can get. I mean, you can get from as little as $100 a day on the ship. And you wouldn't get a hotel for that.
No.
And you get all your meals, you get your entertainment. You've got to pay for your booze and stuff like that. And the so-called duty-free shops are a bit of a rip-off, I think. But
I think there's a reasonable markup.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there is. I mean, I've seen stuff in the duty-free shops that I could get quite a lot cheaper on land. But apart from that sort of stuff, yeah, it's a good holiday if you don't get seasick. And if you do get seasick, get up on deck. We then spent 2 years in Finsbury Hostel. When we first arrived in Australia, the temperature was over then 100 degrees, 38 degrees. Mm-hmm. And it was like that for 12 days straight, 12 days. And of course, in Finsbury Hostel, they're virtually tin sheds.
Or Nissen huts.
Nissen huts.
And
No air conditioning, nothing,
no luxury. And you'd go and stand outside because it was cooler than being inside. Yeah,
it was terrible. But after the Vietnam War, they ripped the tin sheds down and built nice, cosy brick buildings for the Vietnamese. But another story. We spent 2 years on Finsbury Hostel. I went to school at Pennington Primary. There was no high school nearby. For some reason, I was at high school in England and ended up in primary school here. I stayed there until you could leave school at 14 then. On my 14th birthday, I never went back to school. So that was Pennington. They used to have, when it was time to go back into school, after at the beginning of school or recess, they used to play the drum, and I used to play the bass drum. Boom, 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 boom.
Yep.
So I can still remember the tune.
Yes, I still remember that, unfortunately.
Yeah. That's probably my best memory of Pennington. There's a few bad ones, but that's probably the best one. I left school and got a job at Quinn's Sports Store in Port Adelaide.
Okay.
So I'd get the bus from Finsbury down to Port Adelaide. I stayed there for a little while, just as a bit of a gopher. Then I got a job closer to home at a service station on Phillip Highway, the mobile station opposite Holden's. My pay was something like £3, sixpence a week. You could do a lot with that, yeah. Oh. But I would
that,
work.
So that was when you were what? 16 sort of age?
14, 15.
Yeah. You were 14, 15 when you left, or 14 when you left school.
Yeah.
And then you went and worked at the sports store, but that was less that was, that less was than 12 only, months,
yeah.
Was it?
Yeah.
And, okay, so then when you your parents moved out to Elizabeth, then you got the job in the service station.
Yeah. I used to work 12 hours a day opposite Holden's there. And that was the days when you would clean the windscreen, you would check their oil, check the water. Mind you, it'd be pretty hard to check the water these days with pressurised systems.
Yeah. Be somewhat hazardous.
Yeah. Then I got into the clothing trade. At Kentish Clothing, I started on the steam presses. I was actually, I shouldn't blow my own trumpet, but I was that good. I was actually running two presses at the same time, where normally you would one person, one press. And then I got asked if I would be interested in going into the maintenance department. So I went in there, learned my trade, became an industrial sewing machine mechanic, and moved around to various clothing factories in the area. Mm-hmm. But they got killed off, eventually, all the clothing factories, by Vietnamese started manufacturing clothing at home. And it got to the point where you would the people would take all the clothing to their place, all the cuts to their place, and next morning you go back and pick up the whole jeans. And it was so much cheaper, and so eventually it killed off the clothing trade. I don't know of a clothing factory in South Australia, certainly, now.
No.
There's a couple of shoe factories. That's about all, I think. Because I worked at Levi's, Corfu, Oxford Clothing Company. I even worked in the city for a repair company, going out factories to repair. And I can't think of one of those factories that now still exists, which is unfortunate.
So when you went, you were still living at home when your parents moved out to Elizabeth.
Yeah.
So what was life at Elizabeth like?
I thought it was good. Elizabeth Vale we lived at, which was one of the newer areas. I had a bush bike with a few friends on one Sunday.
Elizabeth Vale, okay. So where is
Holden's area? Where GMH is.
Okay, so that area over there.
Yeah, Lyle McEwen Hospital. It's Elizabeth Vale, that area there. Mm. We lived in Winterbourne Road. And one Sunday, me and a couple of friends, we actually got on our push bikes, rode into Adelaide, looked around Adelaide, rode down to Port Adelaide and rode back home again, just for something to do.
Mm.
I used to come up to Gawler on my push bike as well.
Okay.
Even then. And because I know there was a place, I used to like taking photos. I had this U-Buke little box brownie.
Yes.
And there was
that's all there was at that stage.
There was a camera shop in the main street, and I can't remember where it was, but it used to be open on a Sunday. And he used to have cheap film.
Mm.
So I'd always ride up on my push bike from Elizabeth to Gawler to get some film. But of course, it's a lot different now. You don't need film.
No.
And you can do a lot more with photos as well.
So it's also only about a 20-minute drive, but it obviously would take a lot longer than 20 minutes on a push bike.
I can't remember how long, probably 40 minutes, something like that. I can't remember exactly. But being Elizabeth Vale was right at the furthest end from Gawler, you know, as Elizabeth Downs, wouldn't too far, that was the other end. But we had some good times. I can still remember some of the friends I had then. I won't name them, but we had some good fun. Of course, then when 79, I think, I got married, the wife already had a baby. Then we had four more, so we ended up with five. And they're all doing quite well. One is manages a tyre company. The other one is a national sales manager. And another one is in childcare. The daughter's in childcare. That was four boys and a girl all together. And another one is currently in Perth doing a master's degree in something. I don't know what he's got.
So what ages are they now?
Oh, yes.
So you were married in 79.
Yeah,
so one assumes they were
78 born. We got married, sorry. The first one was born in 79, 81, 84, 92. The first boy was born in 74. They've all done quite well. The youngest boy, currently in Perth, as I said, he's got more degrees than a heat wave.
Mm.
And he's engaged to a neuropsychologist.
Okay.
So they'll all do okay for themselves. They've all done quite well.
So in some ways, they're quite young.
Yeah.
Considering that you're older than I am. So, it's interesting.
Yeah, we didn't get married until I was about 30, something like that. That's R4, yeah. Yeah, the daughter being the youngest, she's in childcare. She's married to a Central Districts footballer. I'm not going to ask who you barrack for.
I was brought up. My grandfather was head trainer of North Adelaide.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So I was always brought up
the second best team.
Yeah, yeah.
If you go by distance, yeah.
Well, I think a lot of Elizabeth was North Adelaide territory
before
Central Districts was started up.
Yeah.
So I think Central Districts...
1964 was the first league match.
Yeah.
1959 they became a bona fide team.
Mm.
I can still remember their first match.
Yeah. All I can remember was that when Central started up, they took a lot of the North Adelaide catchment areas, which was lovely for Centrals, but
their coach
North Adelaide a little bit for a number of years.
Yeah.
In fact, I don't think they've ever recovered, have they?
I can remember North Adelaide in a grand final kicking something like 1-8.
Yes, luckily I was at a wedding that day, and I hated the fact that there was a wedding on the day of the grand final.
Yeah.
But when I saw the score, I was really pleased that I wasn't at the grand final.
Mm. I think it was Sturt that played. I'm not sure. I can't remember.
No, it was Glenelg.
Glenelg, was it?
Glenelg, Cornsey kicked a goal after siren to beaten off. No, that must have been the year or so before then.
That was, I think, so I remember that. That was about. That was about 1972, I think, that match. Mm. I remember that one. And I remember Central's first win. Their coach was Ken Eustace.
Yes.
And I'm pretty sure their first win was when Ken Eustace was selected to play in Tasmania. So he wasn't even there.
He wasn't there. Maureen is related to Ken Eustace.
Oh, is she? I know Ken. Yeah.
Okay. I think we might stop there, this one.
Okay.
If you're happy to have another session at some stage.
Yep.
Because I think if we go on, we've got
a heap more to do.
A heap more to do,
yeah.
And we're both going to run out of time. And so I think we'll stop there. So thank you very much, Ian, and I look forward to seeing the rest.
This interview, recorded in the year 2017 by the Gawler Community Broadcasting Association, is available for download for purposes of educational research. We expect that any creative written or electronic work derived from the recording gives due credit to the interviewee, interviewer, and GBA.